Welcome to A Slab of Glass. I'm Jeff Perry. Each episode, I'm joined by my co-host, Christopher Lawley, as we discuss iOS and iPad productivity.
Hey, Jeff, how's it going?
It's going really well, Chris. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. So we are back. We just launched the podcast. We put out 3 episodes in the first week of the show. And I don't want to speak for you, Jeff, but I'm really happy with the way it's going. The reception has been great. I just want to thank everybody that's reached out about the show, given us feedback or complimented it or just reached out. I really appreciate it from everyone. I just want to thank you guys.
Yeah, it's been a really nice experience launching this podcast and stuff. I mean, you and I both know that the stress that was kind of put on us to get the show out and make sure everything was right. I guess we're doing something right because we're getting a lot of love and a lot of support from people in the iPad community. So thank you for everyone that's listening that was a part of that launch. And if you're new, you're not ostracized either. So we welcome all newcomers as well. So thank you again for listening.
Yes, absolutely.
Chris, you have some follow-up, it looks like. Can you kind of go into it?
Yeah, so on our last episode, you got a sticker for your Apple Pencil from, oh my gosh, I'm blanking on the place you got it from.
Slick Wraps.
Slick Wraps, thank you. Oh, I could not think of the name. On the episode itself, I actually ordered one, and we'll put a link to in the description or in the show notes. Oh, I'm getting my YouTube terms mixed up now.
Like the video if you liked it. Comment below.
So I got the retro sticker slick wrap whatchamacallit thing. They all have a bunch of different names. I kind of like it. We talked about the application process on the show and how it's kind of difficult to get everything to look nice and not to show seams. Mm-hmm. And mine definitely shows seams. I'll put some pictures in the description or in the show notes. There I go. I did it again. But the seams are definitely noticeable. And the other thing is since it's a sticker, if you don't get it just right, in which I did not, it can get some dirt where the seam is. So it just looks like there's this black line going down it now. And it doesn't look too good. Luckily, it's on the opposite side of where the 6-color Apple logo is. So that's good. But
yeah,
for the most part, I like it. I like the look. I like not having just a straight white Apple Pencil because, you know, everybody has those. That's kind of boring.
Right.
I like having, you know, something that stands out a little different. It does make it a little difficult if you, you mentioned this on that episode as well, but it does make it a little difficult if you have some place that you store your Apple Pencil, like a sleeve, or in my case, I have an Apple Pencil stand that sits on my desk.
Yeah.
And the sticker that's on the tip part, it kind of forces it so it doesn't go in and sits in right away, you know, so snugly. It's kind of a little, it doesn't go in all the way. So it's easily just to knock it over. And so I like it. I do have some reservations about it. I'm going to keep it on for right now, but I don't know if it'll stay on forever. If Apple Pencil 2 was to come out tomorrow, which I highly doubt, but if it was to come out tomorrow, I don't think I would order another one. That being said, if Apple Pencil 2 does come out tomorrow, I want it to come in colors. Mm. Just at least black, but give me a blue one. I want a blue one.
Blue's an interesting color. I'm curious as to why blue. Is that just because it's your favorite color or what?
Yeah, blue or orange. Blue or orange have always kind of been my favorite colors, especially design-wise and product-wise. I always like those colors. Mm-hmm. Black is great, but every tech plot product comes in black or white. So it's kind of, they're played out in my opinion.
Yeah.
It's let's mix it up. Let's get colors back in. Colors are interesting. It does different things, but so far I like the wrap. It's great. It makes it stand out. The application process is a little difficult. If you do order one of these, I highly recommend you follow the video. When you order it, you get a little pamphlet that says, go to this URL and watch the video for the application process. Watch it. It really did help out for me. Have a hairdryer heat gun handy. You really definitely want to have a hairdryer heat gun. All right, so let's move on. We had an Apple event. Do you have some, it was the Apple education event. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it wasn't too much out there for the average consumer. There were some new iPads. There was some software for the EDU. Apple talked a lot about their education platform and things like that. But for the average consumer, or even people like you or me, Jeff, that work off of our iPads all day long, there really wasn't too much. Do you have some thoughts on it? Or
I think I have more thoughts than you, Chris, on this. Primarily because, like, this isn't, for me, this wasn't about the education event. Like, I'm not in the education field. I've never worked with an iPad in an education kind of thing. This was never something that I was a part of. And frankly, I'm kind of oblivious to those kind of things. But I will say that I was looking at this from a consumer standpoint. And when Apple released the new iPad that has Apple Pencil support and, you know, some better specs and stuff like that, I was really excited about it, mainly because now people can just go buy an iPad and an Apple Pencil regardless of what kind of thing that you're buying. It simplified the process of like, what iPad should I buy? It's one less variable that people have to worry about when it comes to buying an iPad. And I was really excited to see that Apple is taking that direction of like, you want an iPad? Oh, you can have a Pencil for whatever you want with it too. Like, you can get a Pencil for any of the iPads now.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that was the one takeaway from the event. I don't necessarily think they needed to hold an event just to release that iPad. They could have just done it in a press release. But I get they wanted to tell their education story. They had some education software they wanted to announce.
Yeah.
But I do think it's great. I know a few people that have had to go and buy iPad Pros because they wanted that Apple Pencil to draw with. And now you can get the basic iPad for $329. You can pick up an Apple Pencil and you're good to go.
Yeah.
I think that's great. I did a video on my YouTube channel comparing this iPad to the iPad Pro the day of the Apple event. So I haven't even got one yet. I'm kind of planning on getting one, but just not quite yet. I want a new couch iPad because the 12.9 inch iPad is so big. It makes it difficult to just kind of sit on the couch and work with. The big difference for me is you get the A10X chip versus the A10 chip. So the A10X chip is overclocked via GPU. It's way faster GPU performance. It's slightly faster CPU performance. You get a better screen in the Pro iPads. There's a bunch of screen tech that goes into it.
Yeah.
And then there's the small things like the smart connector, the speakers, they kind of add up after a while. So if you really want those features, the Pro is definitely the way to go. But if you want to save some money, go with the baseline iPad. You get Apple Pencil support with it, and you can get a good Bluetooth keyboard, and you have a computer that you can do your work on.
Yeah. And we kind of talked it over in episode 2 as well. I think most of the things that we talked about in episode 2 is still pretty apparent with everything. The only thing that we don't have that we don't have to worry about now is Apple Pencil support. You know, that's really about it as far as like big changes go compared to what the episode that we did on that is. But I mean, is there anything else that kind of struck you with this announcement, Chris? Are there anything that you're excited about with the new iPad or any of the iPad tech that came with it, like the Logitech Crayon or, you know, the fact that you can now annotate and do things with iWork more? I mean, like, was there anything else stick with you in that kind of thing?
To be honest, I didn't even know you couldn't annotate with iWork and the Apple Pencil. I had actually already just assumed you could, but I don't use iWork, so I'd never really looked into it. I just assumed that would have been something that was there on day one with the iPad Pro. It's kind of surprised to find out it wasn't. The Logitech Crown looks interesting. Crayon? Logitech Crayon. I can't pronounce it, but you guys know what I'm talking about. it looks interesting. It's about half the price. The problem is it's only for the new iPad, and you have to be a teacher in an education unit. You have to have that education Apple ID in order to buy one of those. You can't, an average consumer can't just go to the Apple store and buy one for the new iPad. So I think that's a little ridiculous. I know it's Apple trying to cover themselves and they want people to buy their stylus and not Logitech's. The big difference between the Crown and the Apple Pencil is it doesn't have pressure sensitivity. So for somebody like me that doesn't do any drawing with this iPad, that's whatever, not a big deal. The Logitech one doesn't have the male lightning port on it, so you can't just plug it into the side of the iPad and charge it, which I know a lot of people think looks absolutely ridiculous. And, you know, I'm inclined to agree. It does look ridiculous, but at the end of the day, it's really handy. Every day I just plug my Apple Pencil into the side of my iPad for about 10, 15 minutes and I'm good to go for the whole day.
Yeah.
So I know it does look a little ridiculous, but I think it works. I think it's fine. I don't know. There, I'm kind of over it. The one thing that I take away from the Apple event that they need to give to the rest of the consumers is more iCloud storage space. Now, they gave students 200 gigs of free iCloud storage space. I don't think they need to give that much.
I thought it was 20.
No, it's 200.
Really? 200.
Does make sense. They want the kids to be able to keep their work as they move on. And when a kid starts the Apple, you know, gets an iPad in a one-to-one program or whatever, they get an Apple ID assigned to them and they keep that Apple ID throughout the whole time they're in a one-to-one program at a school. So you get 200 gigs there. Now, for an average consumer, I don't think they need to give 200 gigs. It would be great if they did, but I don't think they'll do that. They just need to up it from the free 5 gig tier. The free 5 gig tier is ridiculous. I was actually at seeing my parents this weekend, and my mom was kept getting the error message of, hey, you're out of iCloud storage space. So I went to go do the whole delete old backups and then turn on backup thing again. But she has so many photos on her phone that the backup is 6 gigs. So it won't even back up her phone, because the backup, the baseline backup would be 6 gigs. And it's not enough. So I'm like, this is ridiculous, Apple. You need to up it. So they need to up it at least to 50 gigs.
Yeah.
I think 50 gigs would be a great free tier. I think it would make a lot of people happy. 200 gigs is great for students. I'm glad Apple's doing that. Don't think they need to do that much for consumers. I mean, it'd be great if they did. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying they shouldn't do it, but that'd be great if they did. But I think 50 gigs would be enough.
Yeah. And at this point, storage is so cheap. When did iCloud come out? iOS 5, iOS 6 or something like that?
It's not so much that storage is so cheap, but Apple's relying on companies like Amazon and Google also for a lot of their data centers. Mm-hmm. A lot of the iCloud data sits in AWS or Google's, I forget what it's called, Google. And I believe even some of it is in Microsoft Azure. Apple's been building data centers, but they're not building enough. Apple has too much data for its own good.
I kind of understand that, but scarcity is not the option, not the problem here. It's just something that I think Apple should just, you know, flip a switch and just sort of suffer the fact that, you know, they're going to be a lot more storage needed for backups and things like that. But, you know, for you and I, Chris, as like kind of the tech support people of our family, when we get problems with iPhones, it's invariably going to have to do with storage in some capacity. And Apple's been making changes with their hardware to up their storage from 8 gigs to 32 for the most part. And if they can do that with storage as well, I think that would be something worthwhile.
Cloud storage and all that stuff is tricky. It's not easy by any means, but they got to do something.
Yeah.
Because the 5 gig tier, it isn't working. When you can't even just back up one iPhone, it's not like my mom has a bunch of devices like me. She literally has her iPhone. That is the only computer she has. And I can't even back up her iPhone because it's a 6 gig baseline for a backup.
Yeah.
And she doesn't even have enough iCloud space for that.
Yeah, and that's problematic.
Yeah, absolutely. So do you have anything else you want to add about the Apple event, or would you like to move on to our main topic?
No, let's go to our main topic. I'm really excited to talk about our quest for the right keyboard.
I'm very excited about this episode. I think we have a very interesting structure to it.
Yeah, I'm excited about it too. I'm also a little afraid, because I think that you and I have been burned more times when trying to find the right keyboard than we've been saved. So, I mean, we kind of go into this. I mean, I do it anyway, not to speak for you, but I come into this a little jaded, you know, like I'm just kind of, I'm a little frustrated with it, but I'm happy with the solutions that I have.
Oh, yeah, trust me, I'm with you there when it comes to frustration. It has not been an easy search. I think I've gotten to a happy place, but it was not easy getting to that happy place. But we'll get into that.
So I kind of want to start things off with the keyboards that we currently use. You know, I think that would be a good jumping off point, and then we could kind of go from there.
Absolutely.
So the keyboards that I use currently, I use two keyboards, both of which are Apple products. I use the Smart Keyboard for travel, and that's just connected right to my iPad Pro 10.5. I use that with my Apple Pencil, and you know, I can just sort of take it with me wherever I go and be pretty happy with it. The keyboard is technically a full-size keyboard, but there are some quirks and things that they've changed to make it sort of fit the form factor of the 10.5. Nothing that's a deal breaker by any means. I think it's a great keyboard. I think the layout's great. But my favorite keyboard, and the one I use when I'm home at my desk, is the Magic Keyboard 2. It's a Bluetooth keyboard that Apple created as a peripheral primarily for the iMacs, but like I bought one not too long ago and I've been using it as my home keyboard, and I love that a lot more, probably because I'm just so used to a full-size keyboard, and then going to the 10.5 keyboard, which is not cramped, but it's a little bit smaller than a full-size keyboard just because of the size of the screen. you kind of have to give the size a little bit of a shrinkage to make it fit. But when I go to the Magic Keyboard that I had here at my office, I just can fly with it. I can write way faster with it than I can with my iPad Pro keyboard, the smart keyboard. I can just sort of fly with it. I feel like I'm more efficient with writing and with working with things that involve me typing on my Magic Keyboard than my smart keyboard, which is confusing to say. So I'm just going to change from smart keyboard to the iPad keyboard just for layman terms. But yeah, I mean, those are the two keyboards that I use. I mean, that's primarily where I am with it. I think it's like an easy 50-50 at this point of what keyboard I use when. I try and take the smart keyboard with me when I go and travel, but that can be problematic because then you have to find even more space to put your iPad on than just where you can just set it on a stand. Then you have to find a place to put the keyboard in front of it. Like, you kind of take up a whole table if you go to like a coffee shop or something like that, and that just, it's not great.
So as far as keyboards that I've used, a lot of you guys, if you've ever seen any of my videos or I, even in the earlier episodes, I talked about it, is I have a mechanical keyboard, and it's the Code keyboard. And I really, really love mechanical keyboards. I really love that clicky sound. I love the tactile feedback. It's really, there's something about that I just feel like I can type faster and better with.
Mm-hmm.
But mechanical keyboards, they are not portable at all. They're heavy, they're big, they require a USB cable, or most of them require a USB cable. The good ones require a USB cable. They're not portable, and the iPad is meant to be portable. So I talked in, I believe it was episode 2 in the bonus topic area, I talked about my standing desk. And so my mechanical keyboard is now full-time at my standing desk. It's where I do a majority of my writing.
Okay.
And that has really worked very well for me. I like to be, when I'm writing, I like to be able to pace around. It helps me think. Having that set up permanently there has been fantastic. Now, I don't always work at my standing desk. In fact, we talked about in episode 1 about my desk setup, and I absolutely love my desk. So for everything else, I have been using the smart keyboard. And getting to the point that I can use the smart keyboard for everything has been a saga. Leading up to this episode, I knew I wanted to Jeff use the smart keyboard a lot. And I've had my smart keyboard since the day I bought my iPad Pro, but I never really gave it a fair shot. For the most part, I use the Magic Keyboard with the Canopy case by Studio Neat. And I took that with me. I took it on the road. I use it at my desk. I use that for everything when I first got my iPad. And I used it that way for a very long time. So I never really gave the smart keyboard its fair shake. So I wanted to basically go full time with the smart keyboard for a while. I found I really liked it, but I kept having a problem where it would disconnect itself. I would be typing and then it wouldn't let me type anymore. It would just stop and like the on-screen keyboard would pop up, like it just didn't see it there anymore. Or like I would flip it around and it wouldn't work and I'd have to disconnect it and reconnect it. And then eventually it kept getting worse and worse and it just stopped working at all. So I went to the Apple store and turns out there's a 3-year extended warranty on this. This is a known issue. So if you are having issues with the smart keyboard or the smart connector keyboard, I'm sorry, and these issues sound like the same ones you're having, take it to the Apple store. Don't bother going online. They'll make you, I sat talking with somebody online for 45 minutes before they would let me make a Genius Bar appointment. And then they came back to tell me, oh, there are no available Genius Bar appointments right now. So just walk in. Just walk in. It'll take some time, unfortunately, but just walk in and go take care of it. So I walked in and I talked to the person at the Apple store, and it took about an hour for them to get the serial number and find somebody that could help me and bring a new one out. And once I got home and I've been using the smart connector keyboard this whole time, I actually really enjoy it. Now, I'm using the 12.9-inch model, so that means I have a full-size keyboard, unlike the 10.5 or the 9.7. So that experience may be a little different, but as far as it goes, it is fantastic. I take it to work with me every single day. During lunch, I'll go grab lunch at some place and I'll take it with me and I'll do a little bit of writing wherever I'm at. And it's fantastic because it's portable. It's light. It's easy to flip around. I've used a lot of those clamshell keyboards, a lot of Bluetooth keyboards that just, they're not really worth the time to go over because they're either at too much weight, they're too heavy, you have to worry about pairing them, connecting them, recharging them. The smart connector keyboard is just there. It works all the time as long as you're not having one that goes out. I know a lot of people on Twitter have been complaining about the smart connector keyboard because it's been going out on them. It seems like it's a lot of the 12.9 inch users that kind of got their keyboard at the beginning. And, you know, they either carried it over with them to the second generation 12.9, or they still have the original 12.9 inch iPad. If you're having those problems, take it to the Apple Store. But I also understand it's incredibly frustrating. Mm-hmm. I was incredibly frustrating that time. It was basically a week that I was dealing with it going out on me. And I'm like, I can't rely on this keyboard. I bought this keyboard and I can't rely on it. And what good does it do me if I can't rely on a keyboard to get my job done?
Right.
That being said, now that I've got it fixed, it's great. It's fantastic. I don't know if it's going to go out again. I'm really hoping that we'll be getting new iPads in June at WWDC or in the fall. And when that happens, I really hope Apple redesigns their keyboard, because even they know that there's something wrong with the Smart Connector keyboard. I mean, they put a 3-year extended warranty program together. They know there's something wrong with this keyboard. So I'm hoping that it gets redesigned. I'm hoping we get a new version. And we'll kind of go over in a little bit of what we'd like to see on these new keyboards. But I think the Smart Connector keyboard is a great keyboard for anybody to use, but there is an asterisk on it.
Well, didn't with the 11.3, didn't they say something along the lines of, like, this update also fixes an issue with the Smart Keyboard? Am I right in that? Or, because I remember seeing something.
You are right. In 11.3, which at the time of recording just came out a little earlier this week, there is something in the release notes that says it does fix an issue with the Smart Keyboard. I don't think that's entirely true. I think there is a software issue with the Smart Keyboard, especially if they're putting in the release notes. But when I had mine going on, it was clearly a hardware issue. With my old Smart Connector keyboard that I took into Apple before they replaced it, it would not work at all. At the time that I brought it in, I could not get it to work at all. As soon as they brought a new one out to me, it worked just fine. So to me, that's a hardware issue. Mm-hmm. Maybe there's something else going on that's just way above my head, but that absolutely 100% seems like a hardware issue to me. So maybe it's a combination of they needed to fix something in software, but at the end of the day, I think this thing does need a redesign. If they're having this many problems with it, and that they had to put it together an extended warranty program. So if you do want to buy one of these, just keep in mind there is an extended warranty program on them. It's up to 3 years. So it's not like if you go out and buy one and it breaks, you can't get it fixed. You will probably just have to deal with a headache for a little while.
Yeah. And I will say I haven't had any issues with my Smart Keyboard. So I think your mileage may vary with it as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm not going to say, I don't want to say every single one of them is going to break on you at some point in time. I've just had the problem. I've seen people on Twitter and I've had some people contact me that have said they've had the problem. I don't think it's a widespread thing. I think it's probably a very narrow subset. Yeah. And I have a feeling it's probably some of the ones that came from the first batch of iPads. Mm-hmm. Like you said, you've had a 10.5. I haven't heard from anybody that has a 10.5 inch iPad that has that problem. It's mostly been people with 12.9 inch iPads that got them back in the beginning.
Have there been any keyboards that you've tried, Chris, that, you know, are worth talking about, good or bad?
So the keyboards that I've tried that I've been happy with outside of my mechanical keyboard and outside of the Smart Keyboard, which those two I absolutely love despite any problems I've had with them. The other keyboards I've liked are the Apple Magic Keyboard with the canopy case. That one has been great. I absolutely love that. I kind of talked about that one already. I used that a lot when that one first came out. The Magic Keyboard is a great feeling keyboard. It's great to type on. It's kind of clicky a little bit. I like the key switches. I like the depth that it has in it. It's a solid keyboard, and the canopy case by Studio Neat is a very fancy case. It's almost a little hipstery. It's got nice material. It's got a leather strap on it. So it's something that kind of holds it all really well together. You said you were using the Magic Keyboard too, Jeff. What case are you using to kind of prop your iPad up, or are you using anything at all?
I'm using a case. It's by Finti. It's like Fintie. I don't know if I'm saying it correctly or not. I always switch between Finti and Fintai. But yeah, they created a Magic Keyboard case for both the old version and the new version that you can, you snap it in, and then it basically is this faux leather case that has two magnetic straps on it that you take the magnetic straps, flip them over and bend them back, and it creates a little stand for your iPad, and it works pretty well. It's a lot like the canopy case that Studio Neat has as far as function goes. It's not as pretty, I will say. I think Studio Neat has a great eye for design, and their products have always looked great, but it does the same thing, and it's significantly cheaper. I think you can get it on Amazon for like less than $20 right now.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that is significantly cheaper. I believe the Studio Neat one is either $30 or $40.
It's $40.
Yeah. Okay. $40. Yeah. But it is, it's definitely worth the price in my opinion. Now you do have to, like, there's kind of glue strips in the Studio Neat one. So it, once you put the Magic Keyboard in there, it's kind of in there unless you want to rip it apart, which will break the case. Like it won't really be usable anymore. So it's kind of a permanent attachment. But for me, that's been fine. Mm-hmm. I've used some other Bluetooth keyboards, but I don't know if they're really worth the time to go over. Mm-hmm. I've used a lot of the clamshell keyboards. I don't really like those. They just add so much weight to the iPad. Yeah. It makes it unwieldy. The other thing, too, about clamshell keyboards is they're really designed for laptops, so you would have the keyboard and the trackpad.
Yeah.
But there's no trackpad on an iPad, so there's a lot of empty space in those clamshell keyboards as well. I don't really like the idea of having to recharge a keyboard. That's what I like about the Smart Connector keyboard, is it's always good to go. I don't have to worry about charging it. My mechanical keyboard, I plug in to the camera connection kit into the Lightning port, and that's good to go. I don't know about you, Jeff, but I just don't like having to worry about charging Bluetooth keyboards. And I know they last a long time, but it's just one more thing that can go wrong for you.
Yeah, I have enough things I have to charge right now, and I can understand that. I will say the Magic Keyboard, the Bluetooth keyboard that Apple has, I charged that thing full once, and I think it was over 6 months ago, and I still have like a 60% charge on that thing. It lasts forever.
Yeah, I think I would charge that thing like once every 4 months. Yeah, when I was using it full time, like even when I was traveling with it.
And the nice thing about it is that if you use the battery widget, you can actually see the battery percentage mm-hmm. on it. I don't know if any of the Bluetooth have that. I'm sure it's possible, but I know that Apple will have it with their products and stuff like that, because it will just show you what you have left as far as battery goes. And you can kind of keep an eye on it and charge it for a few hours one day and you'll be fine. But yeah, like Bluetooth is inherently problematic when it comes to making sure that everything's charged, because the one day that you don't charge it and it's at less than 5% is the day that it dies. And it's also when your dissertation's due. You know, that's just sort of how fate happens, you know, that's just what's going to happen. But like, also have an issue with Bluetooth, not just with the fact that you have to charge it, but also because Bluetooth inherently automatically shuts off after a certain amount of time. And so you kind of have to wake the keyboard up to come back to work. Like, it just seems like it's just one of the laziest workers you have in your workforce, that you have to consistently make sure it's not sleeping on you and then try and make it work for you. Because there have been times where I'm doing some research and taking notes at the same time. I'll read something for a couple of minutes and then try and type it out into a note that I have side by side and split view. And then it's just like, oh no, here's half of the first word that you were trying to make because it didn't fully wake up yet. And I'm just like, I wish there was like a setting or something that you could change, but I think it's a hardware thing where it's trying to conserve battery. And that's why Bluetooth keyboards last so long when you charge them, is that they automatically go to sleep after like 30 or 45 seconds of inactive use. So that's one thing I'm not a huge fan of, and that's why I prefer a Smart Connector keyboard over a Bluetooth keyboard. I will say, if there's a Smart Connector keyboard that I don't recommend to literally anyone, it would be the Logitech Slim Combo for the 10.5. I know for the 12.9, it's a
co-signed.
Yeah, I know for the 12.9, it's a little bit better, but like
No.
Okay, I'll take your word for it because I've never used it. But like the 10.5 Slim Combo, I think, is the worst of the two. Primarily because with the 12.9, it's so big, you can fold the excess spacing on that keyboard under itself. And so it's a lot like the Smart Connector keyboard that Apple makes, where it just shows the keyboard and there's no excess filler stuff or anything like that. It just is the keyboard and your screen, and there's no dead space anywhere with it. And that's what you can do with the 12.9. But for the 10.5, that's not possible. The keyboard is more than half the size. So if you try and fold it under, it's going to have this weird angle downward, like it just doesn't work. So it ends up being this pseudo clamshell kind of case that isn't a clamshell because it has to have a kickstand for it to sit up. Also, by the way, it's more than twice the size of the iPad itself when you put it on. It's incredibly bulky. There's nothing slim about it, and there's barely a combo for it. It has a pencil sleeve that you can slide your pencil in and out of, which was nice, but like it's flimsy. I don't feel comfortable with it. And on top of that, it's just bulky, and it just makes working with the iPad in every capacity worse. It's got a way bigger footprint than any other keyboard I've ever used, including the Smart Keyboard with the Fenty case with it. It's a smaller footprint with that than it is with the Logitech Slim Combo, the Slim Combo didn't feel comfortable. It would continually like wiggle on top of your screen. Like it wouldn't stay shut and it would cause it to wake up and go back to sleep all the time and waste your battery life that way when it's in your bag. Like it just, it like nothing about that that keyboard was useful. And I used to love it. But after like some serious usage with it, the keyboard didn't feel great. The key travel wasn't great. It's a cramp. It's even more cramped than any other keyboard I've used with the 10.5. Like it just like nothing about it really shines. It's always just like one problem after another. And I wish I could say something nice about it. And I guess the closest thing I can say is that it offers place to put your pencil, which isn't offered with the smart connector keyboard that Apple makes. And that's really about it. Like I can't say anything else nice about that thing.
Yeah, I agree with everything you said. I used it for the 12.9. I don't like it. It's a terrible keyboard. It should feel bad.
Yeah, I sold mine and used the money with that to buy a new Apple Smart Connector keyboard. And I'm really happy with that decision.
Do you have any other keyboards you want to mention?
I'll briefly mention the Bridge. And this is another negative kind of thing. Like the keyboards I'm kind of talking about that I don't use are probably going to be negative. But the Bridge keyboard has been problematic, to say the very least. For those of you who don't know what the Bridge keyboard is, it's Bridge with a Y, B-R-Y-D-G-E. And it's a Bluetooth keyboard that essentially allows you to make a clamshell keyboard with your iPad, but it just sits in these hinges. And it's super slim and it's nice. And it's a Bluetooth keyboard, but like, it's not the worst Bluetooth keyboard out there on paper. But the problem I had with the Bridge is that it has a history of like basically you have to play the lottery to make sure that you get one that works. There have been problems with connection. There have been problems with it kind of crapping out halfway through your usage with it, where it will just sort of disconnect and not work properly, or it'll miss keys that you're typing. And I had those problems when I bought mine. I bought a Bridge keyboard on sale on Amazon when it was like $100 instead of $130, which I think it sells for usually. I got it in and I immediately disliked it. There are a couple of things that I wasn't a huge fan of. I did get a keyboard that wasn't properly working. I felt that if you don't hit the dead center of each key, it doesn't register as a key press. And that's just something that I don't understand. That like, I feel like there should be better switches in that thing for the amount of money that you're spending on it, because I never had that problem with the Slim Combo. I never had that problem with the Smart Keyboard. I never had that problem with the Magic Keyboard. If I hit the side of a key, I should expect it to register. If I'm giving it enough force for it to go down and you hear the tactile click of a key, it should register. But for whatever reason, with the Bridge, it didn't. And another thing that I don't think I've ever seen anybody really talk about with the Bridge keyboard is that the hinges are just not greatly built. And by that, I mean that when you use it, it's supposed to basically open and shut like a clamshell keyboard. And those hinges is what's keeping the iPad in there, because it's made to fit like perfectly with the iPad without a case on it or anything else on it. And it's supposed to just slide in and it's there and it's not going anywhere. You can lift the iPad up with the keyboard attached to it and you can shake it and it won't go anywhere. You have to give it some serious force to get it out of it. The problem with that, though, is that when it's such a tight connection like that and you put pressure on those hinges to open and shut the iPad, you will literally see physical strain on the screen, not the glass, the actual screen of the iPad, where if you have ever used a MacBook Air or if you've used something that has a LCD screen without any real protection on it and you accidentally press on it, you can kind of see the ripple effect of it. You know what I'm talking about, Chris? Like that ripple effect of LCD screens?
Yep.
You don't want to see that, because it can A, like kill pixels like no other, and B, completely break the screen altogether. And that's exactly what I was seeing on the corners of where these hinges were at with the iPad. And I didn't feel good about it. I felt like I was going to break my iPad before the end of the day. So I immediately took it off and I put my Smart Connector keyboard back on it. And I've been using that ever since. And I sent the Bridge keyboard back for a full refund because I wasn't happy with it. I just didn't feel comfortable using that, because I just felt that it was going to be a time bomb at some point, where I'm going to look down and the bottom right corner of my screen is going to be dead, and I'm not going to be happy about it.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. If you're not happy with something, send it back, because especially with something like a keyboard, for people that work with their computers and their iPads all day long, a keyboard is necessary. Like, yeah. I know a lot of people like, or not a lot of people, but I know there are some people out there that like the on-screen keyboard, but I can't use the on-screen keyboard. Like it, the, especially on the 12.9, I don't remember exactly how it works on the smaller ones, but it takes up half the screen. You lose half the screen while you're on there. And these devices, they're not 27-inch monitors. I mean, I have a 13-inch tablet in front of me, and if I'm losing half the screen to a keyboard, I can't use that. It just doesn't work for me. Plus, you have to have it propped up at an angle, and it just makes way more sense, especially if you're working with this thing for a long period of time, to have a physical keyboard than to use the virtual keyboard.
Yeah, and with the 10.5, I'll say it also covers up half, and I think with the 9.7, it's also a 50% screen real estate.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, some people really like touch typing on the glass. I mean, I can understand that, because I've written with the iPad on the glass before for some small things here and there, and it's fine. It works most of the time, but if I'm writing like a blog post or something more long form, I want to see the entirety of the screen. And that could be problematic if you're working with glass, if you're working with the virtual keyboard. And that's the main reason why we're talking about keyboards, is because we both prefer to have all of our screen real estate not taken up by a keyboard. And that's kind of the reason that we both want it. And I think that's a reason why a lot of people want it, is that if they want to do work on an iPad, they want to be able to see everything that they're working on. And I can understand that, but at the same time, it can work. You know, I've been on the couch lounging and just, you know, on Twitter or something like that, and I just write a quick tweet with the on-screen keyboard. The one thing I like is when you use it in portrait mode, you can actually split the keyboard to have it be on both sides. So you can use your thumbs as if it was like an iPhone with a split keyboard.
Unless you have a 12.9 keyboard or a 12.9 iPad.
Is that still a thing?
That is still a thing. You cannot split the keyboard on a 12.9-inch iPad Pro. The one keyboard or the one iPad that you should be able to do it on, you cannot do it on.
Oh my goodness. Okay. That totally puts a hole in my theory then. Okay.
I'm sorry. I didn't want to burst your bubble, but yeah, no, I don't understand why that's not a thing on the 12.9. Now, granted, I always have a keyboard attached to this thing.
Okay.
I rarely disconnect a keyboard on this thing because it is so big. That's kind of why I'm looking into getting the new 9.7-inch iPad, or I may wait to see kind of what happens with the next Pro, because supposedly, and I don't want to get into it too much, but supposedly the next Pro iPad is going to be bezel-less, and so be physically a lot smaller, so that might be a little bit better. So we'll see what happens with that. I don't want to get into that today. Oh, I got a hypothetical for you. This is how we're going to do this. Johnny Ive breaks into our Skype call right now.
Okay. And
says, guys, I need your help. Or in a British accent. I'm not going to do a British accent because I can't do one. Guys, I need your help. We need to build the next keyboard for the iPad. And it needs to be aluminium. Not really. I just wanted to say aluminium.
Aluminium.
What are some stuff that we tell him? So for me personally, I think we both covered smart connector is like an absolute must. Like, it's so handy to have. What's something that you want to have on the next keyboard?
Backlighting. I want to be able to use it at night.
Yeah, I would absolutely agree with that. I wouldn't say backlighting is high up on my list. I would say media controls is a lot higher.
Okay.
But I would also say key travel. I want a little bit more key travel. And when I say key travel, what I mean by that is when you push down on a key, how far down that goes is the key travel. Now, the smart connector keyboard, there isn't a lot there. It's like the new MacBook Pros and MacBooks and things like that. There's not a lot of key travel to that. I like mechanical keyboards, so obviously I like a ton of key travel.
Right.
Now, obviously, I'm not saying they need to build a mechanical keyboard into the smart connector keyboard. I don't even think that would be possible. I would like just slightly more key travel, just something with a little bit more feedback when a key is being pushed.
Okay. I can understand that. I will say, if you do want more key travel, that's going to make it bigger. I mean, the reason that the smart connector keyboard is so small is because of lack of key travel, and therefore it's lack of that depth that has to be there for a keyboard to have travel.
You're absolutely right. I think looking at the smart connector keyboard, there is a little bit of a lip, and I wouldn't be surprised if Apple can make that lip a little bit smaller and allow the key travel just to be a little more. And I'm not asking for much, but it just feels like if it was just slightly, just a little bit more, I think that would be significant enough to really just make it feel like it's a little more stable, that's probably the wrong word, but a little more feedback. I just want to know when a key is being pressed without having to look at it.
Yeah, it would validate each key press that you have.
Yeah, and like I said, the other thing I would really want is media controls. I really want to be able to pause, play, skip. I want to be able to change the brightness. I want to be able to invoke Siri from a key. And we're going to talk about Siri in another episode because I have some thoughts on that. But I don't want to have to swipe up from the bottom to go into Control Center and change all that stuff.
Yeah.
I want the keys right there on the keyboard.
Yeah.
And if what they could easily do, because I know if you took the current Smart Connector keyboard and you got rid of the option key on the right side, or if you made the globe keyboard key a function key, you can make the number row or even the top letter, like the QWE row of letters, you can make those function keys and just hold down the function button, hit the key, and it'll trigger, you know, play, pause, mm-hmm. brightness, whatever.
Yeah.
Obviously, I have a feeling the reason why that's currently not there is because it would look like it was too much on those keys and they care too much about the typography and things like mm-hmm. that, which is great. I hate ugly typography on keyboards, but I would rather have this function.
Yeah.
Literally the function button.
I mean, they could make that all kind of be in the back end, where if you're on the home screen and you hold the command button down, that will indicate that, hey, I have a keyboard and I want to know all the key functions I have with it. I mean, if you do that now, you see like four things. Command H is to go home, you know, a few other things. But like if they were to make it so if they had keyboard shortcuts for it, that could be huge. Like if they kept the keyboard as it is, and all that they added was like, hey, if you press option Q or option W or whatever, like these are the things that will happen with it. And like they wouldn't have to change anything as far as the design goes. They wouldn't have to change anything other than just adding a few simple commands into the keyboard, into the software, that when you use certain keystrokes, like, you know, option Q, for instance, or option 1 or whatever, like you can use those as a pro user that's going to want to know how to do all those things. You can be able to do that without having to make things more complicated for the regular consumers that aren't really looking for all that kind of bells and whistles.
Yep, completely agreed. So, Jeff, I kind of wanted to wrap this up, our keyboard section at least, by giving just one recommendation. I don't want to leave people thinking overwhelmed. I just want to give people one recommendation. If you're looking, you just bought an iPad Pro and you're like, okay, I need one keyboard. What's the one keyboard I go get? What's that for you, Jeff?
Easily the Smart Keyboard. The Smart Connector keyboard for the iPad, whether it's the 10.5 or the 12.9, it's going to do its job. You know, keep your receipt in the event that it is a problem for you in the future. But I honestly think that is such an edge case that the only reason that we're seeing it so frequently on Twitter is because the people that are enjoying their keyboard aren't going to tweet about, hey, my keyboard's going great. But I think that if you were to get an iPad Pro and you were to get a keyboard for it, you would be hard pressed to find a better keyboard for the iPad specifically than the Smart Connector keyboard that Apple creates for it. And it's affordable compared to other high end keyboards that are in the same, same ball game, I would say, as the Smart Connector keyboard. It's going to be a good bang for your buck. And if you have any problems with it, Apple will take care of it in 3 years. And, you know, that's nice. It's nice to know that, like, if you have any issues with it, Apple will take care of it in some capacity. That's my recommendation. If you go and buy an iPad Pro today, get the Smart Keyboard for it.
Yep, I actually completely agree. Despite my problems with it, like I said, I got one of the very first ones, so maybe it's an issue that's been fixed. The people that I've heard from that have had this issue, that they've had it for a while. So I don't want the problems that I've had to downplay it, but I do want to definitely point out I have had problems with it. I have heard from people that have had problems with it. So it absolutely could happen, but a 3-year warranty on it, they'll just straight up replace it. It's great. I really like the keyboard because it's portable, it's light, it's easy just to flip around and start typing on it. You don't have to charge it. All the reasons we've talked about. I think if you have an iPad Pro, this would be a great keyboard. If you don't have an iPad Pro, I think Jeff and Ike would probably both recommend go get a Smart Keyboard. Or yeah, I'm sorry, not the Smart Keyboard. I keep getting the keyboard names mixed up. the Magic Keyboard. Go check out the Magic Keyboard and get like a stand like it, whether it's Jeff's stand or my stand, the Canopy. Look up stands for it. If you don't have a iPad Pro, because obviously you won't have a smart connector, then I would check out the Magic Keyboard. I really enjoy mine.
Yeah, and you don't even have to get a stand for it. If you just get like a smart cover or a smart key, or like a cheapo Amazon thing.
That's true.
You can just flip it over in viewing mode, I think is what it's called. And you could just use the Magic Keyboard naked, which looks great. I think it's a really nice design for those.
Yeah, it's a very minimalist design if that's something you really like.
And if you want to go super budget, get the original Magic Keyboard that has like the circular kind of look for it. And it runs on AA batteries instead of lithium ion.
Yeah, it's called the Apple Wireless Keyboard, yeah. For those that are looking for it.
You can get them online for like $40 right now. It's super cheap. And it's the same build quality, I would say, as the Magic Keyboard 2 or Magic Keyboard. Again, Apple, work with your naming process. This is confusing me as we're talking about it. And I have been looking into this stuff for years.
The one thing I wanted to point out with the Magic Keyboard really quick is after the Apple event this last Tuesday of time of recording again, they are now available in space gray. So the way they ship with the iMac Pro, you can get the space gray version. Now you can buy them separately. You don't have to buy an iMac Pro to get the space gray version. There is a $20 markup, so I'm not too sure why that's there, Apple. I mean, seriously, you're charging an extra $20 for a different color. That's a little ridiculous. There's one in my cart right now, and I can't decide if I want to buy it or not. So we'll see.
Is it the one with the number pad, right? Because the one without the number pad isn't available in the space gray.
The one without the number pad is not available. It's the one with the number pad, which would be fine sitting on my desk. I obviously would not take that with me because that thing would be huge.
Yeah. But yeah, there's options out there, budget or otherwise. I think that we're still waiting for the perfect keyboard, but in the meantime, I'll happily use the smart connector keyboard and the Magic Keyboard that I have.
I think that's pretty much it, unless you have anything else you want to add.
No, I'm curious to, because we're looking here at the after show notes, or at least I am, and you mentioned something about a notebook and pen.
You know, I actually want to kind of call an audible if you're okay with this.
Sure, hit me.
And instead of talking about that, because I'm actually working on a video for that stuff, and it'll probably be out before this episode comes out anyways, how do you feel about talking about AirPods?
Ooh, okay. What do you want to know?
I was really late to the AirPod game. I ordered some the day you could order them, and then like I canceled my order an hour later because I was like, I don't need them. At the time, my job was me driving around in a car a lot, so I didn't really use headphones really at all. Like it was really just, you know, my phone was in my stereo, you know, Bluetooth connection to my stereo, so I didn't really need them. And then, you know, everybody got them, and they'd be like, oh, these are the most magical things ever. So I kind of waited, and I was like, and you know, I'd check in every once in a while. I'd see if they were in the Apple store, and I was like, I'll just go walk in and pick them up, because they were back ordered for such a long time. They had a 6-week back order for almost a year. Like it was really bad. So I kind of waited, and they were never really available. And by the time they became readily available, it was Christmas time this last Christmas in 2017. So I ended up getting them, and I absolutely love them. This, I know a lot of people say this is their most favorite Apple product ever. I don't think it's my most favorite Apple product ever, but it's definitely up there in my top three. It's definitely one of those products that it's Apple at their best. And I just kind of wanted to talk about, you know, if anybody's holding out and thinking, you know, well, maybe I don't need the AirPods, maybe I do. You know, they're kind of expensive, but for what you get for the wireless tech that's in them and for the ease of use, like they're incredibly easy to pair. I've had lots of different Bluetooth headphones, and those are just annoying and crappy and not worth your time. The AirPods, yeah, they're more expensive, but they're absolutely fantastic, and I absolutely love them. They have been so handy for me to have that when I'm riding or just walking down the street, or I have a new job now where I just have headphones in a lot. It's really handy to have. And you don't have that wire that's coming off you. You know, back in the days of the iPod and stuff like that, we didn't really think of that wire going to the iPod as really a big deal. Like I don't know about you, but like it didn't seem like a big deal at me at the time. And now when I actually have to plug headphones into my iPhone or something like that, it just feels annoying. Like I feel like I'm anchored to my phone. Like I'm I have to have my phone a foot away from me because, you know, the headphones will come out. Like it's just so weird that as technology moves, we get accustomed to the new tech, and how we think about the old tech is just bad now. So it's, I don't know. I was just curious to see if you had any thoughts on that.
Oh, I have so many thoughts on this, Chris. Primarily, like, I bought my AirPods last Thanksgiving time. Like, I bought them just before the Black Friday deals and stuff like that, kind of on a whim. I had some extra cash burning a hole in my pocket, and I was like, I really want to try these AirPods. I really want to get some nice wireless headphones, because at the time, I didn't really have any wireless headphones, and I'm just like, I think it's time that I try and do something like that, because I listen to podcasts day in and day out, and I really want some, like, nice-sounding headphones to go with it. And the AirPods sort of seemed to check all the boxes that I wanted. So I went and bought a pair on Thanksgiving, around Thanksgiving, just before Thanksgiving last year. And I bought them, and less than a week later, I misplaced them or they were stolen. I can't really figure out what happened.
Oh, that's terrible.
Mm-hmm. And so then I went back to the EarPods, which are the wired headphones that look just like the AirPods, but they're just wired. And I can't tell you the amount of frustration you get after losing your AirPods, which I was devastated about. It was super upsetting because the AirPods are my absolute favorite Apple product I've ever owned. Like, hands down, my favorite Apple product ever. The simplicity of it, the ease of use, the W1 chip in this thing makes pairing things and connecting things so, so nice. I can't compare it to anything else. So I went back to the AirPods and I was using them. And then I decided that I didn't want to spend another $160 on a pair of AirPods because it's $160. So Best Buy had an option where you could get the Jaybird Freedom 1s, which are really nice Bluetooth headphones for like $50. And they're usually like $110. So it was a really, really good deal for like Black Friday, like the week of Black Friday. I bought a pair. I just went ahead and bought it to give them a try. They're really nice sounding. They're really good quality. They still have a wire connecting the two earbuds together that go around the back of your neck. And even that, Chris, that small piece of wire that is pretty much unobtrusive was too much for me. Like, I was so upset that I didn't have my AirPods. Like, everything I put in my ears reminded me of the fact that I don't have my favorite piece of Apple tech and my favorite headphones ever in my ears. Like, I'm using something of less quality and something that I find to be inferior. So Christmas time comes around and I start trying to plan around, you ever do the calculations in your head of like, I know I could probably get this amount of money from my parents, mm-hmm. and like my mom or my grandma. And like, you try and do some calculations of like how much money you're going to be able to get and how much money you need to save to sort of make the difference up to buy a new pair. And that's what I was doing. And my fiance Courtney knew how upset I was. I was literally moping around for 3 days after this whole fiasco of losing my AirPods was, because I was so upset about it. Which sounds silly, but like, it was just, it really struck me to my core, and I can't really explain why. So Christmas Day comes around and we're opening Christmas presents, and Courtney bought me a pair of AirPods for Christmas, and I didn't know what to do. Because it was such an emotional thing. I don't know why I have such an emotional connection to these headphones, but I do. And like, it was just a very, very emotional thing. And I didn't know what to do, but I thanked her for it. It was way above our budget that we set ourselves for each other, and she still bought them for me. I'm internally grateful for it. And, I still have them. I haven't lost them yet. So
that's good. You shouldn't lose them, especially if your fiance bought them for you.
I know, but like, to kind of go back is like, I have these AirPods in my hand right now, and like, I can't stress enough how much I love these things. I use them every day. The charging on them is beautiful with the internal charging case. The W1 chip makes connecting to these things just amazing. It makes everything it goes back to the old Apple mantra of it just works.
Yep.
And I haven't seen an Apple product that's come out in the last 5 years that has the same capabilities with it. You know, maybe the smart connector, the smart keyboard for the iPad Pro, that just works as well. It just works. I love these AirPods to death. I love the fact that I have another pair that I'm not going to lose. I tell myself that every day. Like, it got to the point now where I actually have a belt loop case for them. It's like a silicone rubber case that has a belt loop.
Okay, that's the nerdiest thing we've ever said on this show.
I clip it on my belt and I put it in my pocket just for extra security purposes. I know I'm never losing these things ever again. So, yeah, the AirPods, 10 out of 10, would buy again.
Yeah, there's a couple of things that, for me at least, that I always, no matter what, my number one golden rule for the AirPods is you take them out of your ear, they immediately go in the case. There's no exceptions. There's no like, oh, I'm just going to set them down and I'm walking out of the room and I'll be right back. No. You just can't do that. I am excited. And this isn't really a rumor show or an Apple News show, but there is some speculation that the next version will be waterproof. So, you know, you can use them for swimming and things like that, which would be really great. I'm a swimmer, so I enjoy that.
I would be very curious to know if those actually stay in your ears when you go swimming.
I bet you what'll happen is when you go swimming, there'll be some sort of connector you put through to each one. Because like, if those came out of your ears when you're swimming, like, they're gone. Like, there's no way you would find those in a pool.
I'm just imagining like a pool boy having to get his skimmer out for the pool filter and just trying to find people's AirPods every day. Because like, that would be a thing.
There would absolutely be some sort of like cable going between the two to connect them, because there's absolutely no way, like, yeah, no, in the current form factor that would work. Like, they would come out of your ears, and if they came out of your ears, they would be gone. But what makes me even a little more excited is that we kind of saw that with the Apple Watch, is the Apple Watch Series 2 became waterproof, and then the Apple Watch Series 3 got LTE and got quite a bit faster, and it's basically its own device now, which I would be really curious to have for AirPods. I'd love to have AirPods be their own device, so I wouldn't have to have an Apple Watch, or I wouldn't have to have my iPhone with me. I could just put them in, go for a walk, and you're good.
That would be the new iPod Shuffle. That would be interesting.
I think so, too. I think it would be like a, hey, double tap to just start playing music, and it would be good to go. Now, the one problem with that is I think it would just be music, and I listen to podcasts a lot. So I think that would be a trade-off, but I would still probably get them.
Yeah, and they are also talking about the new ones having wireless charging capabilities, so you can use the power mat that Apple's making and just charge them that way, too, not to use a lightning connector.
Where is the power mat too? Like, maybe we shouldn't talk about this because it's probably will come out before we release this episode.
Yeah. Watch the 1st of April it comes out.
I'm really curious. We haven't heard anything about the power mat because I know I want to buy a couple. Like, I'm not just going to buy one. I'm going to buy a couple of them because I have the fancy new Apple Watch, which I think we'll talk about in a future episode.
Yeah.
And then, you know, fancy iPhone and you know, I'll definitely get the fancy case for the AirPods. But I like the idea of wireless charging, especially for things like the AirPods and stuff like that, because just being able to set them down, they charge pretty quickly. So I don't charge those overnight. When I'm getting ready in the morning, that's when I charge my Apple Watch and my AirPod case, and that lasts me throughout the day.
Yeah, I never really find any issues when it comes to charging my AirPods. Like, my Apple Watch I charge overnight, my iPhone I charge overnight, because that's how they're made. They're made to only last for a day's use. But like, I've gone a whole week without having to charge the AirPods case, and I'm usually fine. Like, as much as I use them, the battery life on those things are astounding. The wireless charging has never really been a selling point to me. I've never really been super interested in it. I've got dongles, I've got chargers, I have everything I need to support everything that I use on my office area, in my bedroom when I go to bed. I've got portable chargers in my backpack for my go bag. Like, I have everything I need when it comes to charging things like that. So wireless charging to me isn't really a selling point unless it will allow me to charge my phone faster. And at this point, I can't really find any indication that that will be the case.
Now, if you want to charge your iPhone faster, the best thing you could do is get the fast charging kit for the iPad. And use that for, which is incredibly expensive. Like,
it's like $90 for everything or something like that.
Yeah, when I bought my iPad Pro, I was I don't want to say upset, but it took so long to charge that original 12.9-inch iPad Pro that I went out and bought the fast charging kit, and I bought the super long USB-C to Lightning cable and the USB-C brick, and it was expensive, but I bought it, and I'm actually really happy I bought it. That just stays in my backpack now, and so whenever I travel or if I go to a coffee shop or a bar or something and I need to charge it, it's there.
Yeah. I mean, if I had the money burning a hole in my pocket like I did when I bought the AirPods, I'd probably buy those next, but I don't, so I won't.
Yeah, it was expensive. I sold some stuff to finance my first iPad Pro and all that stuff, because I had actually just bought a MacBook Pro like 6 months before the iPad Pro came out. So it was an expensive year. So
yeah, I would imagine so.
So I think, do you have anything else you kind of want to add to the AirPods discussion, or anything else you want to put in there before we wrap up?
No, I mean, I think the AirPods are just a great product. I think that if anyone's vaguely interested in trying them and they have the money to do so, they should.
All right. Yeah, I completely agree with that. So I think that's it for this episode. We're running a little bit longer than what we typically do, but I think that's okay. I think we had a good discussion here. This is a new show, so I do want to ask, you know, this isn't going to be something we regularly do, but I do want to ask, if you're listening in a podcast player like Overcast, if you could recommend us, if you're listening to Apple Podcasts, if you could rate and leave a review, it does help out. If you're listening on YouTube, we do have a YouTube channel, by the way, if you'd prefer to listen there. If you can just, you know, like, subscribe, it really does help out. It's a new show. We're both really excited about this. We really want to push this and get it out there to everybody that's interested in this topic. Please feel free to email us. Our email is aslabofglass@gmail.com, or you can tweet at us at aslabofglass. And we also have a hashtag set up. So, and guess what? That's #aslabofglass. That goes into a sheet. I think we were talking about doing a feedback episode at some point. So if you guys have questions about anything, or if you want help with something, or you want to talk just app recommendations or talk about something, just get a hold of us. And I think we're going to probably do some sort of feedback episode. Maybe it'll be a regular thing, just kind of based on, you know, what kind of feedback we get. So that being said, I think we'll wrap up here. If you guys are interested in my work, I have a YouTube channel called The Untitled Site. You can find all that stuff at theuntitledsite.com. I'm on Twitter @Chris_Lawley. That's LAWLEY. Jeff, where can people find you?
Yeah, they can find me over at tablethabit.com, where I write very often about the iPad and iOS in general. I'm also very frequent on Twitter @IamJeffPerry. You can get a hold of me there at those places. So, Chris, I think that this has been a lengthier episode, but I think that it was well warranted with as much passion you and I have with keyboards. And I'm sure that keyboards are going to be around as a topic of conversation in the coming episodes as well. And it's never going to stop unless we both find like the most perfect keyboard ever, which, you know, fingers crossed. But, you know, until then, it's definitely going to be a talking point for the both of us.
Absolutely. So that being said, thank you guys so much for listening. Have an awesome day.